Hi, and welcome to the How Not to Think podcast. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin. This is the podcast that looks at different ways of thinking and particularly disruptive ideas in many areas that challenge conventional wisdom and so forth. Before we get to today's great guest, Roberta Mattison, just a reminder that my book, I Think Therefore I'm Wrong, is available on Amazon, so please check that out. Now, I met Roberta, and I said, oh, you're very accomplished, can we talk? And she said, well, funny you should mention that, that's the name of my latest book, and indeed it is, Can We Talk?, which looks at conversations in the workplace, how important they are, how to conduct them authentically, and what that really means for leaders, management, and business in general. Roberta, welcome. Thanks so much. You're coming to us today all the way from Boston, Massachusetts. Go Red Sox.
I'm sorry, what was your question? We kind of had a little bit of a stall here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, welcome to you. And you came to us from Boston. I threw in a go Red Sox, you know, in there. So.
Well, that's good. I think our team is doing well. I didn't catch the game last night, but I'm optimistic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, they're going to do well. It's going to be interesting. But anyway, talking of doing well, you're somebody who has done very well, been in this space for at least 20 years in what I guess broadly is the HR space, which is creating authentic and effective communication with your team, your employees and managers, so that you create the right culture. And clearly that talk about engagement has picked up in the last few years, and the research has shown more engaged teams are more productive and more successful, right?
Well, I like to think of this as much broader than an HR topic because, you know, those organizations that leave culture to the HR team, you know, culture is really starts at the top of the organization. And I know I used to be head of HR many years ago, and I actually thought I could influence culture, but in fact, learned very quickly that it was happening at the top, the president, the CEO, and then it cascaded down. And you know, one of the reasons I wrote this book, Can We Talk, is that I work with a lot of executives who, you know, are good leaders and they want to be great leaders. And I have been very clear with them that they cannot rely on HR to improve their leadership skills, their communication skills, because if you look at organizations, you've got what, maybe one HR person for every like 200 or 300 people.
Yeah.
So the sooner you become self-sufficient and the better you get at conversations, the more effective you'll be as a leader.
Yeah. And, you know, communication, unfortunately, and perhaps surprisingly when you think about it, is just something that is not really taught effectively or at all. And you know, when it's such a critical life skill, even beyond the boardroom or organization, that's amazing.
Well, I find it especially amazing when you look at, you know, people who are in medical school or dental school, or, I mean, and there's like no courses on people skills. So that's a little startling.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was 20 years into my career as a practicing psychologist, trying to get people to change behavior and so forth. And I realized, wait a minute, you know, I was trained at the best schools, been doing this 20 years. No one has ever even talked about communication, which to me was essential, how you framed it. So that's when I wrote my book, Power Talk, and now creating a course on that. Because as you say, specifically in the helping professions, where you are trying to motivate people, to follow your advice, that isn't just about telling them the facts.
It just right. And you can't tell them what to do, right? You have to influence them and hope that they'll do what you're requesting.
Yes, absolutely. So how did you get into this? I know you were at a pretty early age, stage in your career. You were heavily involved in HR. Did seeing these things make you realize there was a huge gap there that needed addressing?
Well, I definitely saw that there was a huge gap in what, you know, in leadership, that there were a lot of people thrown into leadership roles who, quite frankly, never should have been put into those roles, and other people who were put in there and never given any support. And so when I started my consulting practice over 20 years ago, one of the main, you know, areas that I focused on was the area of executive coaching and really helping leaders who are good leaders become great leaders. I think that great leaders are a weapon that any organization can use in today's war for talent, because they are really in such short supply. And so if you have them, you're the organization that's going to be able to keep your people, which if you can't find people, that seems to make a lot more sense these days that you need to keep them.
Yes, and that's definitely one aspect that you stress in your work, isn't it? That this developing this sort of authentic, effective leadership is going to help maintain your talent, not exactly. Spend years and years training them and then they go off to your competitors, right?
Well, if only you could get years and years out of them today, right? I mean, if you get months and months, in some cases, you're doing well.
Yeah, that's almost mind-blowing, the change in the last, I don't know, you'd know better than I, two or three decades for sure, where people would, when I was growing up, people would have a job and that would be their job for the next 40 years and they'd stay with that company and all of that. But
well, when I was going through, you know, it was more, you waited, you know, you'd count the days until your 1 year anniversary, right? Because then you could start looking for a job because you had been somewhere for at least a year. You never thought about moving, you know, after a few months. That would be horrible for your resume.
Right. But I'm guessing from what you say and what I've heard that is actually happening today.
Right now here in the U.S., we have 10.4 million job openings, which means that employees have a ton of choices, right? Mm-hmm. And I tell my clients, we want to make sure that they choose you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so in Can We Talk, can you tell us a little bit about, break down that book a little bit more for us? Because I'm sure it reflects a lot of what you do in your practice.
Absolutely. Well, when I wrote the book, I put together a framework, and that's the 7 principles for managing difficult conversations at work. And I really thought about, you know, who are the most effective communicators that I know, and what do they do really well? And then I looked at who are the people I know that aren't great at communicating, and what might they do better? And, you know, some of the points that I'll share with you today, and if you want to know the rest, you'll have to read the book. The first one is really around clarity and making sure that you know exactly what outcome you want to have happen as a result of any conversation. And so I was talking with a client the other day who wasn't really clear on his objectives. And as a result, when he had a conversation, he thought it went really well. And his employee was quite confused. And at the end, the employee was like, okay, this was great, but what is it that you wanted to have happen here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I call that being strategic about your communication. And so many people, even in a work setting where you would think it would be perhaps a bit more obvious you need to be strategic, but most people are used to sort of more egocentric and non-strategic. Mm-hmm. communication and having a strategy is really key, because otherwise, right. What's the point?
And you have to be clear, right?
Yeah. So there's clarity. What else is on that list of seven key things? We don't have to tell us all, because I know you want people to actually read the book, but you know, give us a couple of others.
Yeah. Another one that I like to talk a lot about is curiosity. And that's really asking questions so that you can learn more about where the other person is coming from, and demonstrating that you really do want to hear their thoughts, right? And not just, you know, having a checklist of questions and going through that checklist and then like, okay, that's great, but here's what we're doing anyhow.
Well, you know, for me, so much of communication or effective communication and influence is about meeting people where they're at. And if you don't ask them those questions and you don't listen to them, you don't know where they're at. And well, therefore, you're going to be off target.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said listening, because so many people run through questions, even interview questions, right? Okay, he answered that, check. Yep, she answered that, check. And we're not even like thinking about, well, what did they say? Or did they really mean what they said? Or I didn't really understand that. And you're not following up with questions. So, you know, when you're curious, as I am, you're always asking, you know, and I tell my clients, it's a great thing to say, well, help me to understand, right? Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to put you on the defense where I'm constantly like, you know, badgering you with questions. It's mm-hmm. really, you know, hey, you know, help me to understand why you think that way. You know, why do you think that happened? And watching your tone, right? Because I could say, well, why do you think that happened? Or, well, why do you think that happened? And right. being really curious, because honestly, I really want to know, because if I didn't want to know, I wouldn't ask.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, effective communication is based on setting up a safe and respectful environment where people can be authentic. That might apply a bit more perhaps to personal relationships, but it certainly applies to any of them. I'm sure you've worked with corporations where team members just have not said in what they really feel because they know they'll be shot down or criticized or, you know, whatever. So, if that's the environment you create, that's what you're going to get, right?
I'm chuckling because this morning I was on a coaching call with an executive in who's in Korea, and she was telling me about their meeting that they just had at the board level. And then she went back to one of her colleagues and said, gee, I noticed you really didn't say anything in the meeting. And his response to her was, well, I didn't want to get fired.
Exactly.
And it's sort of like, okay, if that's the culture, there's a bigger issue here.
No, but that's really important that people don't understand about communication generally. If somebody thinks they're not going to get listened to, or they're going to be criticized or punished or ridiculed, they're not going to tell you what they think. So, you know, what's the point, really?
And that's why I talk a lot in the book about building trust, right? And if we're going to have a difficult conversation before we have one, I'm really going to need to look at the trust levels here, right? It's sort of like you and I just met. We don't really have a trusting relationship. You know, would I be comfortable commenting about something that I'm seeing that might be off? Like, no. Okay. But if you and I, like your friend Regina, if we knew each other for a long time, I might say, hey, you know, something's been on my mind. I think it could be helpful for you. So it's a whole different ballgame. That trust situation is one that everyone really needs to look at when they're having these kinds of conversations.
And of course, what are the signs that people pick up as signs of either trust or distrust? Again, they may be people who have a hard time trusting, or they may have a very good sense of what is quotation marks safe and what isn't. What are the cues that, you know, if you and I are having a conversation, as you say, we've just met, what would make you trust me or feel as if I were trustworthy? Just using that as an example.
Well, I always say to people, it's our behaviors that matter, not our intentions. So, you know, if I have never given you a reason to question my integrity and my behavior, then you're going to more likely trust me than somebody who has let you down a number of times, right?
Mm-hmm, of course.
So it's really about doing what you say you'll do, even if that means going back to someone and saying, you know, hey, I did tell you that I was going to get this to you by Thursday. It is Thursday, but it appears like that's not going to happen. I think I can do that by Monday. Would that be okay? Right. At least the person isn't sitting there Thursday night at midnight going, okay, the clock has just expired.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It seems to me, though, just working, not so much necessarily in corporations, but with individuals, that seems to have eroded. I mean, that sort of respect for customers, clients, seems to have eroded a lot. We're currently having quite a lot of work done on our house, and and I'm sort of shocked by how cavalier so many of the potential contractors are, you know, like, oh yeah, we'll get back to you, and you don't hear from them for 5 days, or, oh yeah, we'll be over this afternoon, and, you know, you don't hear from them. And I don't know what that is. I mean, I know there's a supply chain shortage, but that's got nothing really to do with communication. It seems that there's a different expectation now. What would you view about that just culturally? Do you see that or not?
Well, having built a home and having been through several renovations, it has definitely changed in the last couple of years. And there's definitely a shortage. And I think these people are so overwhelmed. First of all, most of them who start their own, you know, contracting businesses, they've never taken a class in management or leadership or communication. And I think they're just trying to keep their head above water. And the fact that no one calls you back now is almost an expectation. Mm-hmm. And you give the job to the guy or gal who actually calls you back.
That's
doesn't
right.
matter if they're any good, you can have the job.
No, that's right. And that's where, you know, that trust and respect start to build up. Somebody says, doesn't do what they say they're going to do, then you're not going to trust them with a job. Somebody says, yeah, I'll do this. You know, that's what you're judging them on is their ability to be truthful and tell you what's going on. And, very important. Yeah. In the business suite today, and I know it's difficult to generalize, but I would think this is probably what you are doing is more important than ever. Is it not?
I would think so too.
No. I mean, I'm not just setting you up for that, but looking at cultural change and opportunities for talented people and all of that, this is key.
Well, you know, when I was writing this book, and when I decided I was going to write this book, it was because there are way too many conversations that are unsaid. And then when they are said, we say them in anger, right? Or mm-hmm. we've reached the end of our limit. And it's really an epidemic, and it's costing companies hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, these unsaid conversations. And much of that is due to the fact that people, I find, they don't even know where to start. Like, well, where do I start? Like, how do I? So for me, I like having scripts, which is why in the book, I created a lot of scripts for people, because I need a script. Like, where do I start? And then I can make it mine. And how do I know when I'm done, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, I was talking to my son, who will be graduating from college in June. And, you know, I know a thing or two about, you know, job searching, since I help employers hire good people. And I was saying to him, hey, you know, this is the time you should be doing this, this, and this. And then he said something to me I've never heard before. He said, "You're right."
Ah,
and then I went, then I started going, and this and this and this and blah, 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 blah. And then I paused and I was like, "Hang on a minute. Did you just say you're right?" And he said, "Yes." And then I had to tell myself, "Be quiet, like, shut up." He agreed with you. And I think in these conversations that we get into, you're telling somebody about maybe something they're not doing right. And they're like, "You know what? You're right." And you just keep going on and on and on. You're not listening.
Yeah.
And even I, who wrote the book on this important communication, this important book, I wasn't listening. And I had to step back and I had to laugh and go, "Oh my God, he just said, you're right."
Yeah, can I have that in writing? Yeah, no, absolutely. No. That's true. And one of the points that I often try to make in communication classes or education is, in some ways, communication is not about you. You know, make it all about you. You're not going to be addressing the other person. You're not going to meet them where they're at. You're just going to be off on a tangent, and you're going to lose them if you ever get them on your side to begin with. But that's understandable, that it's natural. That is the default setting when people communicate. This is what I want you to understand. This is what you need to get and need to understand. Yeah, but you got to be more subtle than that. Right? You have to be more subtle than just imposing yourself on people and recognizing it's a two-way interactive communication where you are trying to reach the other person.
Well, I mean, we see that all the time on social media, right? And if you're on Facebook, I mean, there are some people that keep having conversations with themselves. They ask for your opinion and then you give it and then they hammer away why your opinion is completely wrong,
mm-hmm.
rather than saying, "Wow, that's an interesting perspective. Thank you."
Yeah. Well, that raises another issue, is someone who's been in communication for a number of years, what you think the impact of social media has been on people's communication skills or lack thereof?
Well, I think everyone thinks that they have a microphone now. And I think a lot of people are unfiltered. And they're not thinking through how their actions will affect their future. So, for example, for my social media, my Facebook, my personal page, I don't accept friend requests from people I don't know. I don't mm-hmm. accept them from clients. That's mm-hmm. like my personal space, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, we can have a conversation, mm-hmm. but you're not going to get into my personal space. Because I don't want somebody to do a search, find my name, and find me talking about something that may not be so appropriate to have yeah. a conversation about in the general public. But today, most people don't think about that and they just rant.
Yes, yes. And also, it's not really communication, is it? It's no. that faceless communication, which is quite different. Just putting something out there. And that's quite different, actually completely the opposite of what we're talking about in terms of effective communication, which is trying to understand the audience, the listener, and tailoring what you want to say to them rather than just blurting out whatever.
It's very interesting to watch all of that on the sidelines. And even on LinkedIn, sometimes I'll be like, "Did you really say that?" But I was talking to a colleague of mine the other day who works for a very big organization, and they're very much into open communication. And she was sharing some things on their like Slack channel. And I'm like, "I can't believe somebody actually wrote that." And she's like, "Well, we have a very open, you know, with the parentheses, communication." I'm like, "I don't care. You could be as open as you want. I would never lay that out there. Like, that manager's an idiot," like stuff like that. It's like, you can't be serious.
Right, right. Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. Taken out of context. Yeah, absolutely. It's not communication for sure. And the concern I have is that it trains people to think that is communication and that's what communication should be, but it isn't.
not effective communication. It's great if you want to go on unemployment.
Yes, that's true. If you don't really want a job. But and I suspect that companies do look at social media profiles of potential candidates, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So when you're on Facebook, you potentially are interviewing for your next job.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they don't understand the privacy settings. Neither do I, but that's why I don't put anything out there that I'm worried about, because I think I'm on private settings and only people who know me, but I have no idea. And, you know, one slip up and there you are, right?
Yeah, look at John Gruden.
And you can't get that stuff down.
No, you can't.
Once it's out there, you can't put back in the box.
No. And even if you could get it taken down, it's still been there. You know, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, right? So too late. It's too late. And yeah, I'm sure there are many people who've been burned by expressing themselves on social media and having it been researched and having come back to haunt them. It's a good lesson, actually. Very good.
And some of them never even know that's the reason why they didn't get hired.
Mm-hmm. Or even invited for an interview.
Exactly.
Now, you've also written other books, I think at least four others, correct?
Five others.
Okay, I got confused. I know Can We Talk was one. I saw four others on your webpage. And to do with effective leadership. And again, I suspect around topics of authenticity and respect and the sorts of things that underpin really effective communication.
Mm-hmm. Yes, my books are about leadership. They're about acquiring and retaining talent. They're about communication. And I mean, that all feeds into the same umbrella, right? It's all under the same umbrella of really being effective at work and creating environments where people love to work and customers love to do business.
I'm sure you get a varied response from leaders who have been in the business for a while. Are some genuinely sort of surprised that they need to do this? Do they come from different eras where this perhaps wasn't so much an issue? I'm sure you get people across the board. I'm sure there's a varied response to what you're offering. Do the leaders actually see the value immediately in it? And again, I'm sure there's a varied response to that.
Do you mind repeating your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did it go? Yeah, looks like it did. I'm sorry. When you present these ideas to leaders, particularly people who've been in the business a long time, I'm sure there's a variety of responses, but, you know, is there sort of a typical one that you get? Does it vary by age? You know, perhaps some of the older ones used to more old school stuff are a little resistant. I mean,
I write like I speak, right? And I'm from New York, so I'm very direct. And a lot of people find that very refreshing. And mm-hmm. if they don't find that refreshing, then they should speak to someone in California. But and so people will usually say to me, wow, I've never thought about it that way. Or no one's ever said it quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not here in my writing and in my thought leadership and in my consulting and my coaching. I'm not here to be part of the crowd. I'm here to make you think and to be a better version of yourself. And so people who like that will engage me. And if that's not for them, then I advise them to engage someone else.
Yeah,
but I like to tell the truth, because it's not going to help you, right? How can you get better if I say, no, really, you're a great communicator? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, my 2-year-old wouldn't understand you. Like, you know.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm a big believer that, you know, virtue and value is the basis of wisdom and authenticity. And as soon as you divert from that, you get a bit lost. But if you stick to being authentic, respectful, trusting, honest, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. So, I mean, that's my perspective, that wisdom comes from just taking a virtuous position of value, nothing else. But as soon as you start thinking about, well, this might screw my chances of being elected, or I won't make as much money, or, you know, whatever else comes in, then you're off track.
Well, I think what my clients most value is the fact that I have been where they want to, where they are, or where they want to go. So at age 24, I was an executive. So I've been in the executive suite. I know exactly what goes on there, and I can help guide them. So what I write about, I only write about things I know about. And you'll find in most of my, and all of my books, you know, the stories that are in there, people are like, where do you get your material? I'm like, you cannot make this up. This is what's happened in my life. This is what I'm observing. This is what's going on in the world. And so it the writing and the coaching, it's very authentic.
Now, clearly, and it needs to be, and that's why you're successful. I presume you studied also communication and people like Robert Cialdini, and who writes a lot about influence and people like that. Did you do that in school, or do that subsequently when this developed an interest for you?
You know, I read books that are interesting to me, and I try not to read too many business books because I don't want to be regurgitating what other people say. So when I wrote Can We Talk, I didn't read the most popular books on, you know, difficult conversations. The mind is a really interesting place, doctor, as I'm sure you know. And I wanted to make sure I didn't subconsciously like steal somebody's idea or just pretend it was mine now because I read about it. And so I'm very careful in what I read. And if somebody recommends a good leadership book to me, I may read it. But I like to read other kinds of books just to kind of keep, and I like to read the Wall Street Journal, so I'm current on events. Mm-hmm. And I like to experience life. So I do a lot more experiential things than reading.
Actually, I think that's great advice. Great advice. Because so many of these books are just a slightly different angle on the same point, really. And that's not to say, you know, they don't have some value for some people, but for somebody in your position, who probably already knows a lot of this, and maybe even more than the author, why bother?
Well, you bring up a great point. And one of the things that I thought about when you write a commercially published book, you have to write a competitive analysis, and you have to look at other books, as you know, in your arena. And all the books that I looked at, I did not find one book that talked about how to have a difficult conversation with a peer or with your boss. And so when I wrote this book, it's not just for leaders who need to have sticky conversations with their employees. It's if you're an employee and you need to have a conversation with your coworker, you might need to have that conversation with your boss, maybe even your spouse. I made sure to cover everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really key. And it does sound as if you have covered things that a lot of other books don't cover, which is important. And getting to the nitty gritty. I mean, it's easy to say, well, communication's important, blah, 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 blah. You know, digging down into how you really effectively do that is what is important.
Right. How do you apply what we're talking about to your everyday life? And that's the one thing I'm most proud of. People, when they read my books or listen, they're on audio as well. They're like, I feel like you're sitting next to me on the couch. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's because I write the way I speak, right? But not everyone does that.
No, Also, I'm really beginning to appreciate, as audiobooks have become much more popular, that in a book where you are trying to guide somebody, having them be able to listen to you rather than just read you is important. That they can hear you. Looks like you can't hear me right at the moment. So let me restate that and find time 139. What's important with audiobooks is the ability now for somebody to listen to you, which is different from reading what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to communicate and get them motivated, I really think that adds a big dimension to the process. Do you think?
I agree.
Yep. So that's great that it's in an audio format too, not just convenience, but also that connection. People need to hear your voice, the tone. There's so much more that's communicated than the words on a page in an audio book.
Well, what I have done to take that to another level is I've created some mini sessions on my YouTube channel where they're 3-minute videos where I am talking about, you know, and using examples of how to get through these difficult conversations. And that's becoming very popular because not only am I telling you this is what you need to do, but here, let's do it, right? Here I am. I'm going to do this with you.
Right.
So they can engage with me directly and not just, oh, I wonder how she would look when she said that.
Right. No, exactly. And so much of education really should be, even though a lot of it isn't, is show as well as tell. And I think a lot of nonfiction writers miss that. You know, it's all about I'm the expert and I'm going to tell you what to do. No, we need to see that. We need to see it in action. I want to see how that would look like. What would I do?
How do you apply this?
How do you apply it? You know? So again, I think that's crucial. And I'm really, I'm not surprised given your success that you've done that, but that absolutely is the way to do it. There's no question. So tell us a little bit about that. You've got a YouTube channel. Let's start digging in for the listeners about where they can find you and stuff. But then you have a YouTube channel that offers that?
Yes. It's under my name.
Okay. Under Roberta?
Matuson. M-A-T-U-S-O-N.
Right. Roberta Matuson on YouTube. So she has a channel. So go check that out. And you put up videos on a periodic basis, I assume.
Right? Weekly.
Weekly. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. That's great. Which are sort of practical tools. Excellent. If organizations are interested in reaching you, where do they find you?
Well, they can send me an email at Roberta@Matuson, M-A-T-U-S-O-N, consulting.com. They can go onto my website, MatchesonConsulting.com. Follow me on Twitter @Matuson or send me a note or a LinkedIn invite. And if they mention your show, I'm more readily to accept the invitation because I know it's not just someone coming out of left field.
Right. Okay. You know, that's great. And your books, I'm sure, are all on Amazon, correct?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, everywhere where you might buy books.
Okay, great. And you have an author profile on Amazon that people can follow?
Absolutely.
Excellent. While we have a few minutes left, what do you see as the future in this field? Do you see people becoming more accepting and recognizing this is going to be critical? Or do you see this is going to happen whether they realize it or not? How do you see that trend, having been in this now for a number of years? What do you see as the trend moving forward?
I think companies are going to pay more attention to communication in the workplace, especially as we, quote unquote, return to the office. I recently went on a trip like 2 weeks ago to Europe, and I hadn't been in an airport in almost 18 months, probably 2 years. And getting used to like what I have to do, like to get through this process. It was like I've traveled the globe and it was like I've never been anywhere. Mm. And my guess is as people come back to the office or Some people have never even been to an office, right? Because they were hired out of school. They're not going to know, like, their communication skills are going to be rusty. And I think that organizations are going to recognize that. And hopefully they'll invest more heavily in helping their people become better communicators.
Yes, and I would agree with you that you're the expert in this, but I can't imagine it not going that way, because I think it's going to be pretty obvious that it's going to be important to do this at so many different levels of the organization, for the culture, for retaining talent, for success, for image, for all those sorts of things. It's got to be authentic, and it's got to be, you know, communicated, and you got to be able to get that across to clients as well as workers.
I agree.
Yeah. So you're going to be even more in demand.
Well, then you best call me now.
Yeah, that's right. I would suggest doing that right now, because you never know. There might be a supply chain problem with Roberta coming up here shortly. Yeah, well, it's great that you have embraced this in this field. As I say, you know, I came at it a different way, perhaps from the other side of things, realizing that here I was in a position where my job was so heavily dependent on communication, and nobody had even mentioned it to me. And I think that's a real issue in health, the healthcare general field. I really think it's a big issue. You know, doctors don't have the best handwriting, and a lot of them don't have the best communication skills either. And, you know, that potentially is problematic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the example I like to give is that, you know, suppose you're unfortunate enough to have a nasty illness, and the doctor says, well, you know, most people with this, chances are you're not going to make it, you know, more than 2 years. If you believe that, you're going to die within 2 years. But if you challenge that and say, well, wait a minute, that, you know, 80% of people might pass in 2 years. What about the other 20% who live for 10 years? What are they doing? Why aren't you telling me about that? And I have several examples in my life of people who've done that and totally defied the prognosis, totally defied it. And I think that's something really important there to understand, that often, you know, when we're giving advice, a lot of it's generalized, and it doesn't necessarily apply to you. It doesn't mean you say, oh, well, I don't believe him, I don't got that condition. It's more like, well, okay, what can I do? Other people have done this and they've survived. Mm-hmm. So it just all over. Particularly in those critical areas where communication does impact people's lives.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, any last words from you? I'm sure the listeners will be interested in connecting with you again. Perhaps you could just repeat the info as to where they can reach you.
They can reach me by sending an email to Roberta@MatchesonConsulting.com or through LinkedIn or Twitter. My advice is to, you know, start talking. You're not going to get this right the first time, but you're going to get better and better and better at communicating. And the only way you're going to do that is if you start talking.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just gets like any other behavior change. You got to start somewhere and then keep working at it, and it will develop really, really well. And it'll make a big difference in your life. It really will. So thank you so much, Roberta. I really appreciate your time. Good luck with everything moving forward. And I hope I passed the test for Can We Talk and the 7 C's of effective communication.
You get an A+.
Oh, good. Okay, great. On that note, folks, thank you so much again, Roberta. Until next time, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin. How not to think.